speaking of a guy who loves soccer and loves football, analyst with Atlanta United. You know him from radio, TV appearances as well. He is Jason Longshore. He joins us now. Jason, how are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on the show, Glenn.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, and it's always interesting to get a gauge on Atlanta United. So I guess we start off by just kind of going into, look, this team wins the MLS Cup last year, 72,000 people at the final. You've got basically a savior in Tata Martino. You've got this superstar who became a superstar in Atlanta. Miguel Almiron goes to the Premier League, and all of a sudden you lose those two guys. It's sort of a rebuild now. It's a different playing style under a very well-known manager, Frank de Boer, and then in comes the talented South American Pity Martinez. So kind of take us into what the transition's been like, and also take us into how the fan base has reacted as well, with as many fans as we know that continue to go to Atlanta United games.
Wow, it's crazy. Being along for the ride, you kind of forget about how much things have changed in 2019 for Atlanta United. I don't think the playing style was intended to be as different as it has been. Frank de Boer's had some difficult challenges, some that you kind of know you're going to have when you're coming off of an MLS Cup championship, and others, injuries and things that have made things a little more complicated. The compressed off season, and then day one of training, you lose Franco Escobar, you're starting right back. And Frank de Boer, in the early going, was playing in a 3-4-3. He had told us initially that he wanted to play out of a 4-3-3. That was what he had in mind. He wasn't locked into it, but that was kind of from looking at the roster and looking at the way the team played and the way he wanted them to play. It's where his head was on day one of training camp. And then you lose Escobar in your first session. He didn't feel like he had an adequate right back to replace it and play four. So it was a 3-4-3. It didn't really work. You also had a difficult CONCACAF Champions League draw with Herediano from Costa Rica. You went down there in game one and lost, came back, won the second match convincingly. Then you get Monterrey, and Monterrey ends up winning the thing. And I think in hindsight, Atlanta played Monterrey as well as anybody else did in the competition. The only team to take a 90-minute win in the second leg at Mercedes-Benz, but it wasn't enough to overturn the 3-0 loss there. Injuries have been a big story, I think, for Atlanta United this season. They have been for a lot of teams. I mean, Atlanta's not alone in that, but they haven't had their intended back four for one game this season. George Bello, the 17-year-old, was expected to start. He started that first game in Costa Rica and was injured and hasn't played since. Franco Escobar came back after the first month. He's been up and down pretty good for the majority of the season. Recent form has slipped a little bit. And it's felt like a lot of plug and play across the back line. And for a team that wants to play in the way that Frank de Boer intends, which is going to be possession dominant, a lot of building up out of the back, all those changes on the back line have had an effect. I think when the team's had its consistency in that run of matches in May, where they had a very good record, they controlled matches and they didn't give up many chances and they controlled possession and created chances. And Joseph Martinez started to get hot. Since the international break, Atlanta struggled to get any control of matches. They felt very 50-50, very chaotic. It was a good match in Seattle over the weekend, but Atlanta wasn't good enough in the key moments in the match. A couple turnovers, and you lose 2-1 at CenturyLink Field.
Was that the problem there, saying controlling matches? I mean, obviously, De Boer wants the ball because he can manage games with possession in typical Dutch style. Was that down to just technical breakdowns, unforced errors, weren't passing the ball well, not moving well? What was that about?
Yeah, it's a good question, because the two players who made the mistakes and had the turnovers in your final, in your defensive third, are Julian Gressel and Leandro Gonzalez Pires, two of your better players on the ball. Gressel maybe a little too aggressive in his moment, and full credit to Raul Ruiz Diaz for one of the goals of the season after taking full advantage of it. What ended up being the match winner, Leandro Gonzalez Pires, it's just a simple giveaway. And tired leg. Oh, sorry, Glenn.
What kind of dog you got there, by the way? Tell me, now, if your dog barks, you have to identify the name of the dog and the breed. And it has to happen right now. What is it, Jason?
Gwen is a Labrador and Bulldog mix, and she's very vocal from time to time.
Okay, you're going to have to send us a picture of your dog. We're dog lovers here at Soccer Matters. All right, so let's carry on, and Gwen might have been upset at something you said there.
Gwen's a big Leandro Gonzalez Pires fan. And
came to his defense.
He had a rough day. He had a big mistake in a big moment. He didn't pass well in the match. It's a lot of games in a short period of time. And with the injuries Atlanta's had, they haven't really been able to give Leandro and Miles Robinson, your two center backs who've had very good years, you haven't been able to give them days off. Florentine Pogba came in, looked like he was going to be an option to relieve some of that pressure. He gets injured. Michael Parkhurst has had to play everywhere on the back line, right, left, and middle, and he's pretty gassed at the moment. So it adds up, and these mistakes happen.
Jason Longshore joining us, analyst for Atlanta United. And Atlanta United this year coming into this match with the Houston Dynamo, 9-8-3. Home performances, how have they been at home? I know you haven't conceded a lot of goals at home, so that's a positive, right?
Yeah, it was good at home before the international break. Very good at home. They were on an unbelievable streak of matches with clean sheets. But then you come back with the high-profile game, maybe the first half of the season with the New York Red Bulls coming in, and it lived up to the hype. But it's a 3-3 where Atlanta looks to find the match winner in stoppage time to Joseph Martinez and a great ball from Franco Escobar. And then a defensive lapse, and it's not really one player you can single out. It's three, four different guys who just lose their focus deep in stoppage time and leave Bradley Wright Phillips completely unattended around the penalty spot. And we all know you cannot leave a player unmarked in that moment. He's going to bury you, and he did. And it's 2 points dropped. And when you look at Atlanta United over the last couple of months, you can point to 5 points that have been dropped late in matches. And as we know, as tight as the Eastern Conference is this season, those 5 points could mean the difference between hosting or going on the road in the single game playoffs.
Jason Longshore joining us, Atlanta United. So let's talk about a couple of things. This team has gotten different based on two differing managers. I mean, obviously, Tata Martinez, what we loved about him was he was playing forward. He wants to play through lines. He wants to get going. He wants to play it forward. We're seeing him do that with Mexico. He does that beautifully with Miguel Almiron. Almiron has this wonderful relationship with Josef Martinez. Now let's compare that to the Pitti Martinez, Josef Martinez relationship. How do you think that has gone?
Yeah, two very, very different players to link up with Josef Martinez. Miguel, you know, you want to get him into space. You want to let him transition and get out on the run. Pitti wants to play with the ball at his feet. He's not a fast player, but he's an unbelievably skilled player in the 1v1. And he's a player that can pull off things that you just don't expect. That's a very different thing for a player like Josef Martinez and the others around him to get used to, because it is unexpected. And there's a lot of things about the way Pitti plays that is unconventional. I think Pitti, the criticism of him has been harsh, because I think a lot of the comparisons have been to Miguel Almiron, who's just a completely different kind of player. I honestly can't think of a player I've seen like Miguel Almiron with such game-breaking speed and ability on the ball to maintain that speed. I mean, it's a game changer, and opponents have to deal with it, and that creates space. Against a player like Pitti and with a team like Atlanta now that isn't quite as vertical and wants to build up possession and wants to get forward in an organized way, it's a little slower, and you're able to deal with some of that movement off the ball. I think what Frank de Boer is working through, and it's been a process, I think you're starting to see Joseph drop deeper and get more involved in the buildup. And in Seattle, that was a big focal point of the match. I thought it was really effective because it starts to create space in a different way, because he's pulling center backs with him. And when you get Ezequiel Barco and Tito Villalba back, or you get Justin Merrim in the form he's in right now, and they can start to exploit that space, making those overlapping runs, you're creating the space, but in a different way. It just hasn't been consistent this season.
He's Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst. All right, so let's talk. And you hit the nail on the head there with tempo. It's very, very different. And let's go back to Pitti Martinez in comparison with Miguel Almiron. Does your fan base understand the difference? Do they understand that with Pitti Martinez, the game is going to look different the way Atlanta plays it, as opposed to what was there last year, which was an unbelievably attractive product, a tough thing to live up to? But do they understand that part of it, that he is a different player?
It's taken a little bit of time because it is very different. I think Tata Martino's style with this team was very easy for both established fans and new fans to grab onto, because it's pretty simple, the idea behind it. You want to get vertical, you want to play in the other team's half, and you want to do that as fast as possible. I think Frank DeBoer wants to play in the other team's half as well, but there's more wrinkles to it, and especially the organization part of it. And it's something that has been a bit of a, I think, a learning process for the fan base, and not everyone has accepted it. I think a lot of fans, you know, look back and say, well, why can't you play faster? And the conversation always goes, when you look at Atlanta United in the past, they had some of the same defensive breakdowns, probably bigger breakdowns in previous years than they do now. And even Tata Martino was moving last season towards a little safer style, trying to find a little more balance. And he wanted to have a little more possession last year. And in the postseason, there was a dramatic difference in the way Atlanta United played. They went from wanting to dictate the play to wanting to play strictly on the counter. And that was very different, I think, threw a lot of teams for a loop. Frank DeBoer and his style, it's not as easy, I think, to get at first glance. It's not as easy for fans to realize all the different things that go into it. And when you take that and you combine it with the schedule that MLS has had this season and how compressed it's been and how many road trips Atlanta's had and how many times they've went, you know, back and forth across the country in a week, you're losing training time. You're losing time on the pitch. So I don't think the style and the system has hit its heights yet. I just don't think there's been enough time on the training pitch to do that. And it's not as sharp as it should be. When it's good, I think it's very good. But you see breakdowns at times and you see indecision at times, which is something you're not used to seeing with Atlanta United.
How has Pitty Martinez handled the press? And is this a team that's played through him effectively? I mean, obviously he's a primary playmaker. You want him on the ball in the attacking areas of the field to make plays. Have they played and integrated him as far as his teammates the way one would like?
I think they're still kind of figuring out how to do that. And one key element of it that has thrown everything out of whack this season is Ezequiel Barco's emergence first. And I think Atlanta United was playing its best right before he left for the Argentina squad at the U-20 World Cup, where he had a very good tournament, turned a lot of heads. Came back, and first game back, he played in the U.S. Open Cup round of 16 match in Columbus and was injured. Kicked off the ball out of bounds. Should have been a card. It wasn't. The only card was given to Leandro Gonzalez Pires for dissent in the situation, and Barco hasn't played since. He's getting closer, but I think ultimately the way Atlanta functions best is to play through Barco and play to Pitty Martinez. You want him on the end of things to either deliver the killer ball or create the goal or score the goal himself. And Barco is more of that 10 and that facilitator. Now, placement on the field could vary a little bit. We've seen Barco central. We've seen Pitty central. At times, we've seen Julian Gressel central and Pitty out wide on the right side. That's a work in progress, and I think that might change based off opponents as well. But ultimately, I think this team's at its best when it's Barco getting the majority of the touches and Pitty's getting the crucial final touches.
So, another player I want to check on from College Station and Brian near our area, Breck Shea, obviously turned into a bit of a revelation, a serious injury. Now, who's the likely person that falls in line to try and commandeer the left back position?
That's the challenge that Atlanta United's facing right now.
Outside backs, right?
You don't have anybody. You don't have an exact option there because on your depth chart, and I think Frank DeBoer's alluded to it multiple times this season, the starter coming in would have been George Bello, the young U.S. Youth International homegrown signing who debuted late last season. He played in the first CONCACAF Champions League match in Costa Rica, was injured, and we haven't seen him since. He's had surgery. He's probably a month plus out from rejoining the team. Breck Shea was your number two option on the depth chart, and he's played maybe more than they thought he would when they brought him in. I think he's had his good moments. He's had his rough moments. He's been about what you would expect as a number two left back in this team, an option off the bench. And now he's had the ACL injury and he's out for the rest of the season. Mike Ambrose has been here from day one with Atlanta United, another Texas defender, and he's had injury issues over the last couple of years. He just returned from injury and would have come in for Breck Shea on Sunday in Seattle, but pulled his hamstring in training the day before. So he's questionable for tomorrow. We've seen Michael Parkhurst play left back, but Parkhurst has played a lot of minutes as of late, and he's looked a little shaky in moments in recent matches. You'd love to give him a day off, but there's really not a lot of options. And then what complicates it for tomorrow's match even more is on the right side, Franco Escobar is suspended due to yellow card accumulation, and you don't have an option there. Parker can't play in two spots. I'm wondering if they return to three in the back and maybe go 3-5-2 this time around.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. If you're running out of defenders, you go back to a three-back system and you use lateral guys. Parkhurst, as you mentioned, has appeared in 17 games, 1,260 minutes, has been a big part of it there. Let's go back to Ezekiel Barco. And you said his value has gone up. How far away is he?
He's at least a week away, it's sounding like. He did make the trip to Seattle. He wasn't really in contention to be part of the 18, but he made the trip with the team. Usually when those things start to happen, you're pretty close. He has trained with the team, but the team has been very clear in that they're not going to rush Barco and Tito Villalba back. Both are injured due to contact injuries. It's not ligament issues. They were both kicked in different matches and have been out ever since. And there's no thought to rush them back for short-term gains because Frank DeBoer and the technical staff are thinking about that long-term. It's hurting the team a little bit in the short-term because you're having to figure out some different things. Thankfully, Justin Merrim has been one who stepped up in a big way. But you'd love to have Barco back because I think the more he plays with this group, he starts to facilitate and get the best out of everyone around him.
Julian Gressel was outstanding last year. How's he been this year? And has his role been defined or has he been moved around in differing areas?
He's been moved around, similar to what Tata Martino did with him, but it's been between central midfield and out on the right. He's played as a right wing back in the early going in the 3-4-3, played as a central midfielder, played as a 10, played as an 8, played as a right winger from time to time as well. He hasn't been quite as effective. Gressel's had some really bad luck over the last month. It seemed like every match he takes a knock early in it, and it affects him and his quality in the match. He's worked very hard, and I think you're seeing kind of that fighting spirit out of Julian Gressel. He wants to get things right, but at times just the quality and the sharpness hasn't been there consistently enough. I think the question is going to be for this team going forward is what is the combination that gets the best out of all of those players around him with Pitti, with Gressel, with Merrim, then with Barco and Villalba as they come back. And I'm wondering where Gressel fits. I think you're going to see some rotation, even centrally, with Emerson Hyneman coming into the group now, and potentially Mo Adams, who was mentioned as a potential target.
Yeah.
It's going to get very complicated, and I think everyone will be fighting for spots, and it's going to get the best out of everybody, but it's also going to leave some players out from time to time.
Frank DeBoer, how's he been to work with, and what type of manager is he? Is he an inspirational leader to you?
You know, I really like Frank DeBoer. The more that he talks and the more that we get to hear from him, the more I like him. I really like the way he sees the game. I think it's very, very logical. I think there are some times where the language barrier, he speaks English, but it's not his first language. I think that complicates things from time to time. It's a very different personality than Tata Martino, and I think a lot of people had an impression that Tata Martino was a very vocal manager, and honestly, he wasn't. Tata Martino was not around as much with the players as Frank DeBoer is, and that's according to them. So it's a little bit different. I think just that personality difference has been a bit of a, you know, some getting used to for everyone. And I think he's asked some different things and had some different expectations based off his experiences, and the players get used to it one way. I think it's gotten a lot better. And I think ultimately it will be for the best. I think DeBoer brings a ton of qualities to this club overall in the big, big picture of building an identity and taking the foundation that Tata Martino laid and finding another level with it. And also something that can be replicated through the academy. I think DeBoer's time at Ajax, both as a player and a manager, and playing at Barcelona will really help in that regard. But it's not something that happens overnight. And that's the issue that Atlanta United's in right now, is that you're defending a championship and all eyes are on you, but you are going through that transition.
Last one, we'll make this quick, too. With all the struggles in the outside back position, I would assume one of the big challenges and concerns for Atlanta United will be the wide game of the Houston Dynamo and the Hondurans, Ramel Kyoto and Albert Elise?
That's the biggest concern for me coming into it because, you know, as we went through, you don't really have clear-cut options out wide, and you're going to have to take a gamble if you go either four in the back or three in the back because you just don't have players who have a lot of experience on both sides. Julian Gressel's played as a right wing back, and he's played right back sparingly, so that's one that would feel a little logical. But on the other side, on the left side, you're probably going to turn to a winger. You're probably going to turn to a Justin Merrim or a Dion Pereira, a teenager from England, who's played a little bit of wing back in the USL Championship. You're probably going to ask them to have to defend an Albert Elise, which is not what you want to do in your debut playing at left back or left wing back. But that's the situation Atlanta's in. And I think your previous question about Frank de Boer being inspirational, he's going to need to be tomorrow night because I think both teams come in kind of with backs against the wall. Houston maybe a little more so after recent results, but Atlanta with the situation they're in and with the lineup that they're going to have to play, that'll be makeshift to a certain degree. You're going to need some inspiration. And if it comes from Frank de Boer, that makes it easier. If it comes from a player or two on the field, if it comes from the leaders within this team, you're going to need that at home tomorrow night.
Yeah, there is no question. This time of the year, if you're getting injuries, you're struggling, like the Dynamo on the road, you need inspiration. It's got to come from a manager. It's got to come from players. And I think, to your point, that is one of the interesting aspects of tomorrow's game. Jason, as always, great stuff. Thank you so much for coming on. Make sure your dog gets fed tonight. And we'll talk to you again in the real near future.
Anytime. I'll make sure Gwen gets an extra treat tonight.
Jason, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks.
All right, Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst, man, passionate about the game, knowledgeable, great stuff there. This makes this a very interesting game. And again, you can catch it on theCUBE tomorrow, Cube 57, home of the Dynamo. Join Eddie Robinson and myself for the call of this one. Then we're going to go to this weekend's match as well as the Dynamo will head to Toronto FC. That also on theCUBE 57.